And we welcome into the studio here on the Morning Buzz, Charleston City Councilman, my friend Mike Seekings, running for mayor of Charleston, and the runoff is coming up in a week. How you doing, Mike?
Doing great. Thanks for having me. Great to hear you back on the radio and to see you in person. Welcome back. I think the Charleston community is just better off for having you back on the airwaves. So happy to be here.
That's very nice of you to say.
We've known each other a long time.
Yes. And you know, we do go back a ways.
A ways.
Back into the last century,
yes.
Actually.
And we look it.
reaching a climax here with a runoff, and we were just talking a minute ago, this is the first time an incumbent mayor has faced a runoff maybe in Charleston history.
We haven't been able to find another time, so yes, we've made a little bit of history, but again, we're in this race to get through the next election and get through it with the most votes. But sure, we've come a long way on this thing.
Why now? I mean, you're the executive director of the Cooper River Bridge run after the late Julian Smith passed away.
I'm the interim.
And the chairman of CARTA. And of course, you've been very active when it comes to the bicycling community here.
City council.
Okay. And you've been at city council for a decade. You're constantly voted most popular city councilman and by the readers of the city paper.
9 years in a row. Proud of that.
Year after year. So why now do you want to be mayor after Mayor Tecklenburg's had one term in office?
Well, you know, all the things you just talked about is really one of the longest apprenticeships for the job of mayor of Charleston, which is a job that has some, I think, training requirements. You need to know what's going on, not just in your city, but in your region. And one of the things that I've really tried to do in my position as city council is get involved in regional aspects of what goes on, because that's where we are. The challenges that we've got every day, traffic, transportation, mobility, flooding, all those are regional issues. And from where I sit, my perspective, we need someone in Charleston who's going to be a regional leader. I believe I've got the skill set, certainly have the experience, and the timing for me is perfect. It's where I am in my life. It's a job, as you know, I've always been interested in.
Yes.
This is nothing personal. This is something that is a natural step in my progress and my career and in where I stand in the city. I think I can be effective at this point, for
sure. Yes, and I've known for a long time that you had wanted to be mayor and think you'd make a great mayor, and I think that we had an interesting slate of candidates, and congratulations on getting in the runoff.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah.
You mentioned that in your first 30 days in office, if you're elected mayor, infrastructure is one of the things you really want to focus on.
Yeah, and we've been working on infrastructure, you know, on the transportation side, certainly flooding, water infrastructure. We need just to hit the ground running on that, roll up our sleeves, and work together cooperatively within the city and in the region to start doing some things and have a plan. I mean, you know, the Dutch were here talking about infrastructure, and they don't just talk about water. They talk about how water is integrated into your life. They talk about roads and all that stuff. We need to start implementing what people have told us, write on a piece of paper what we want to do, the projects that we want to get after, how many days we've got to do it, match it up, be accountable, give reporting to the people here, and get going.
Do you feel that we haven't done enough to deal with infrastructure since Mayor Roddy left office?
I think that's, to me, you know, one of the themes of this campaign has been just look around what has been done in terms of progress in those areas. And it's hard to put your finger on something, and it's even harder to find an actual plan to get things going. We've done a lot of talking about it. There's been a lot of studies produced, but where are the results? It's time for some results, and we need to have a results-based approach to this, and that's what Mike Seekings plans to do.
Well, you know, we had a water main break on Lockwood Boulevard by the City Marina on Monday morning. We've had gas leaks
right
downtown.
At the end of my street.
Roads get closed and stuff. And so, I mean, this is one of the great cities of the world, but our infrastructure is being stretched to the max, not only by its age, but by all the people that are coming here and taking advantage of this great place.
And just think about that. I mean, you really put your finger on, I think, one of the issues that's so central to what we do going forward in terms of leadership. This is a city born in 1670. Most of the infrastructure that we're using today was built in the 1850s. And you're seeing what happens to infrastructure that sat around since the 1850s and really hasn't had a lot of attention paid to it. All those cranes you see downtown, all that building you see, not just downtown, but all around this region, is private development and private infrastructure. We have got to get behind the public infrastructure, and we just aren't there. I mean, it's a challenge, and one that we've got to accept and we got to get after.
Well, as you know, I've been saying for years that Charleston and the state of South Carolina in general, we tend to be reactive rather than proactive. And all of a sudden we have flooding downtown and problems going on. Like, we better do something about it. Well, you need to do something about it before it gets that chronic.
Absolutely. Capital investment and capital improvements going forward, and some planning. And there's, you know, the city has got many different areas that we need to pay attention to. Downtown is one area, but think about what's gone on as you go across the Maybank Highway corridor, the 17 corridor, the 61 corridor, and the growth. I mean, the metrics are unbelievable. I mean, I like to talk about this. Do you know what the population of the city of Charleston is today?
I'm going to say 90,000.
So it's 135,000 and growing, right? And we're really spread out. Daniel Island, that area, which wasn't even in the city 30 years ago, is now 12,000 and growing. You've got Johns Island, which inside the urban growth boundary, inside the city limits of Charleston, has grown astronomically. If you go out there to Whitney Lakes and all that area where you used to be able to go run and hike and play frisbee golf, now you've got developments all out there. So you got 10,000 out there, James Island 10,000, West Ashley 75,000. So those areas are places we really need to look at and focus and make sure we got a plan for the future. If not, we're going to get overrun. I mean, with development and with traffic, the two are locked in. And now with all this flooding, flooding's affecting all parts of the city. So it's a challenge for the 135,000 people who live here. And then on top of that, and I'll turn it back to you, but on top of that, how many tourists do we get every year?
Well, that's the, millions.
Millions is the right answer. Ding, ding, ding. 7.5 million, which is unbelievable number relative to the people who live here. Where is that balance? That balance between the people who come here for 72 hours and the people who live here for 72 years and beyond, for a lifetime, their families. They go to school here. They work here. They raise families here. They invest their lives here. We've got to focus on the quality of life for those people. And that 7.5 million, if we break it down, is 20,500 people a day.
That's amazing.
It's a shocking number. And when I go out and tell that to people, they're like, look at me like I'm crazy. I'm not crazy. That's a fact. And that's a part of the challenge of what we've got going on in this region, is that management and that balance and making sure, because why do people come here? They come here to see us. They come to see how we live, to see our history, our beautiful architecture. They come to see who we are. We've got to protect that.
The idea that Charleston is a community and not a commodity, and we've seen that clash going on for a while.
I love that line, community versus commodity, and we've got to be a community, and we are a community, but we have to protect that community. And if we don't, then we will truly become a commodity, and that will change the fabric of who we are, and that would be something that we would all regret going forward. And we have to do some things at the local level to make sure that we deal with that. And one of the things is mobility and the other is water. I mean, water is coming at us. I know that Charleston has dealt with water. Heck, a good bit of Charleston is built on fill, but the water challenges today are different for a couple of reasons. Tides are rising. We just have more development out there. There's less places to put that water as it comes at us. So water management really is on our minds, on my mind a lot.
So let me get you to respond to a recent accusation that's come out that there was no flood plan when you were on city council, that you didn't propose any kind of flood plan. Mayor Tecklenburg saying that he's been addressing this issue and that while you've been on city council, you haven't. We've seen the new commercial that's running. Well, just give you a chance to respond.
I haven't seen it, but I've heard it, and that's an interesting way of approaching things. I mean, one of the things that the mayor is the chief executive officer of the city, and it is the mayor who sets the agenda moving forward and the mayor who puts out a plan, right? So we currently don't have in the city right now a plan that is adopted, put forward by the chief executive officer, that's the mayor, and then pursued through action by city council. And one of the things I thought was interesting about that is that I proposed no ordinances for flooding. Well, let me just say this. My district is downtown Charleston. It floods, District 8 floods as much, if not more, than anywhere else. And I recognize it floods all over the city. My job as a city councilman in the first instance is to make sure I support the mayor's agenda and then to get into my district and do what I can do. And if there's anywhere in the city where there's actually been some progress made and some infrastructure improvements made in the city of Charleston, it's District 8. I mean, go look at the Low Battery Seawall, which is about to be constructed, and all those check valves that we put in, which are short term but very effective pieces of infrastructure that have stopped clear day flooding and let things move out. So, It's election season. It's silly season. People will say some things, but I think if you just look around and see the job that I've done, I have been very much a proponent of making sure we move forward and asking every single day, what is the plan? Do we have a plan? And at some point, when you don't get an answer, you can sit on the sidelines and complain about it, or you can get in the game and do it. And that's why I'm sitting here with you today in a runoff for that position, so we can set the agenda, put a plan in place, and go have some action on it.
And we're talking with Charleston City Councilman Mike Seekings, mayoral candidate. Of course, the runoff day coming up on Tuesday, November the 19th. So if you're a resident of the city of Charleston, get out and vote. When it comes to flooding and infrastructure, and you pointed this out in your commercials, and I've talked about this for decades on the radio, it doesn't have to rain to flood in Charleston. And I'm wondering, does city council shoulder some of the blame? Is it just the topography issues? You mentioned the peninsula is on fill, and so we've got some natural issues that come about. But What is it that we can do if you're elected to start addressing these issues and try to remedy that problem a lot? Because people can't get to work. Their businesses are closed. Their personal property is damaged. And it's become it's a joke around the country. Like, oh, it's Charleston. It always floods there.
Right. And look, as leaders, we can't run away from that problem. And sure, all of us have some responsibility to make sure that we move forward collectively on this. It does start with a plan, of course, but also recognizing that you've got that problem and that you have to deal with it. And what better place to start than at our hospital district? There is a project out there called the Calhoun West Drainage Basin Project. I'm telling you right here live, I've said it to anyone who listen, that needs to be the number one infrastructure project, not just in the city of Charleston, but in this region. Why? It's 850 acres. The hospital's in the middle of it. Accessibility on a clear air flood day. You might live in West Ashley and not flooding, or Daniel Allen, but if you're trying to get to the hospital to work as a patient, 25,000 workers there, doubled up with patients and people in and out of there. If you can't get there, that's a quality of life, public safety issue in our region that has to be addressed. Calhoun West, number one project. We've got to do that. That is paramount.
And as much as we salute MUSC as a world-class institution and the new children's hospital they opened up right there on Calhoun Street, I mean, those are issues that they're going to be dealing with immediately as that children's hospital opens up.
Well, I like the fact that you brought that up, because not only are they going to be dealing with it, but we here in the city of Charleston are going to have to deal with it, because that, again, is the gateway in and out of the city, and it is the gateway to the hospital district. And now you've got a new $400 million children's hospital that people are going to want access to every single day. And if you look at the numbers, in 2040, we're going to have clear air flooding that shuts down Lockwood like it did yesterday, every other day. That's untenable, unsustainable. And so we have to come up with a plan, Calhoun West being number one. Some of the things that are out there in terms of plans or not plans are things we should talk about in this election. One of the suggestions is that we sit around and wait for the Army Corps of Engineers doing this 3x3x3 study, which is looking at building a wall around the peninsula. Well, that's not going to solve our problems. Might actually exacerbate them, but certainly not going to solve all the things that are out there. So I think taking a realistic approach, putting pen to paper, saying we got to do Calhoun West, saying, look, we've now studied Church Creek Drainage Basin ad nauseum. We've had not just one, but two groups study it. They actually have opposing views of what we should do out there, but go do something. West Ashley, that's a suburban community that was built by and large in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, open ditch drainage. That's great. It works only if you maintain it, only if you know where those drainage planes are and acquire the easements. That's actually a fairly simple resolution and solution that we just haven't done in the last 4 years. We've left those ditches unattended to. Those are the things that need to get done and need to get done now. And then there's John Zahn. We can talk about that too.
Well, we've been tested the last few years with Irma and Matthew and Florence and Dorian, and we've seen what happens here to Charleston. That's why it's called the Lowcountry. You mentioned John's Island, the development that's going on there, and the rural nature that they want to try to preserve. A lot of this revolves around the discussion of completing 526.
Right.
And
well,
I'm curious to know what your take is on
that. There's a couple things there. First off, on John's Island, zoning is a big part of it. I mean, there's a lot of growth and development out there, and we need to take control of the zoning out there. We need to look at things like transferable development rights. We need to listen to the Dutch, where they say, don't build in those vulnerable, low-lying zones. So then it comes to infrastructure. What do you do about large-scale infrastructure? We've talked about flooding infrastructure. Now we need to talk about transportation infrastructure. 526 has been both on the books and debated now for 25 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about it. I think the last time you and I got on the radio, I was running for city council.
I have a newspaper article from the 70s talking about 526.
So that's a project that was sponsored through by the city 8 years ago. We voted in favor of sending to the county, sending to the SIB. Go see what you can do with it. That ball is clearly in their court. What's in our court at the city now is to build what we can now while all that's going. Build what you can, not what you can't. And there are some projects that we cooperatively with the county can get after. The flyover at 17 in Maine. People want that desperately. It will give real relief. Flying over the end of the James Island Connector at Folly Road, just fly it over. We've already got the land. The infrastructure's built. The ramp's already built. The northern and southern pitchforks. For some reason, the mayor doesn't want to build that southern pitchfork. We got to have that southern pitchfork as you come on and off of John's Island. Maybank Highway, widening and improvements. All those will give us some relief now while we're waiting on the bigger picture. And this whole idea that this race in 2019, 4 years going forward, is about one project, I would challenge that and say 526 is coming at some point. It's not in the next 4 years. We've got to do some things in the interim to give relief. If we don't, we're going to have traffic all over the place, and water, which is what we store on our roads, we're going to store it on our roads. So challenging.
I always refer to the mounds that they have there at Folly Road and the James Island Connector and then Savannah Highway by the Citadel Mall as the mounds of incompetence, because they just sit there and you're waiting for the completion that will alleviate traffic, though I know there's some strong opposition by the Coastal Conservation League and others.
Well, let's talk about that, because those mounds that you're talking about could be the mounds of success, particularly the one you just observed at the end of the James Island Connector and Folly Road. We can complete that right there. We can fly that over. It's consistent with the long, bigger scale picture of 526, and we can get across Folly Road and loop back in, and that will give instant relief now, and it's constant and consistent with the larger scale picture. Same thing at 17 in Maine. That is just dangerous going out there. If you come down 17 going out of town where people are backed up to make that left-hand turn to go to the Limehouse Bridge, if we flew that over, again, not inconsistent with bigger infrastructure issues, but it would provide relief now. And that's what people need. We can't wait 10 or 15 years. If we do, we will really have put ourselves in an untenable position.
Well, and the thing is that when you look at this, you know, we focus so much on the peninsula, and you talk about mobility, and I know obviously a great news about getting the bike lane over the Ashley River
Bridge.
Great news.
I mean, it's something we've been working on for a long time, something that I've been very interested in. A lot of people get credit for that. People worked cooperatively together at the local, state, and federal level. Look at that. When you work cooperatively, something actually good can come of it. And that's what this is all about.
Do you think there hasn't been that working cooperatively with local and then state and federal?
I think that we've been challenged in that regard. And I think there's always this thought that we need to wait for the feds to work and wait for it to come down the state. We at the state need to take the lead. And there's lots of examples of that. This flooding, all this flooding infrastructure issue. We cannot wait for someone else to come and help us. We're going to have to go out there. We're going to self-help on the front end, and then we're going to have to go out and show people it's so important for Charleston that Charleston gets some cooperation, some help from others. But we've got to start that process. We have to lead.
There's always a lot of focus on the peninsula, and rightfully so. It's a beautiful, unique place and one of the great places in the world to visit, and it's a great place to live, and we wouldn't want to live anywhere else. At the same time, West Ashley sometimes over the years feels a little bit neglected. I know that the current mayor had talked about really focusing on West Ashley, and I can't say that the last 4 years there's been a lot of change, but there are some plans in place, or at least as far as what could be coming West Ashley with density and high-rise buildings and the Citadel Mall area and such. And just what's your take on that?
Well, I'd love to talk about it. You again remember 10 years ago when we sat here and I ran for city council, my district spanned the river. I had a good bit of West Ashley, inner West Ashley from the Coburg Cow. And we were talking about some of those issues back then, the whole idea of livability in West Ashley and making sure that we pay attention to some of the core important things. The Greenway, you remember the Greenway was the Greenway was unpaved. When I got elected, I'm like, let's pave it. And there was such resistance to it. People were like, no, it's going to change the world. It's going to bring people we don't want. Well, now you can't find anybody in the world who doesn't love a paved Greenway, right? Projects that are local, that bring a quality of life to the people in the area are the things we need to do. And West Ashley is a perfect example of that. You hear all about this revitalize West Ashley. West Ashley is vital. What we need to do is re-energize it, reprioritize it, not urbanize it, and put some things out there. I mean, you talk about people, and I've talked a lot during this along this campaign trail, say, what is it you really want out here in West Ashley? And what they want is to be paid attention to. They want to feel like they live in a place that we take care of and prioritize. They want some beautification. They want connectivity. And then they want to be left alone. I mean, mobility is a big part of it, but this whole idea if we're going to run it over and urbanize it and change the essential fabric of West Ashley, I don't believe that's where we're headed. And I think we've gone in some directions that maybe we don't need to be going and some that we do. And, you know, the Citadel Mall is part of that. I mean, that's going to be a dense development. It needs to be a dense development that's appropriate and has citizen input. And that's going to happen.
Right. You know, when you think about that, though, at the same time, there's a lot of people that look at this and they'll say, how do you pay for these ideas? And I know you don't want to raise property taxes. You've talked about that on the campaign trail. So how do we, these changes that are necessary, how do we pay for it?
Well, let's talk about West Ashley in particular. Some of the things that we're talking about in terms of prioritizing and connectivity and beautification, those are all scalable projects that within the budget that we have in the city, which has grown, by the way, in the last 4 years, about 30%. We just need to, when we go through our budgeting process, budget money into the West Ashley community to make sure we do some of the things that people who pay their property taxes expect to happen. I mean, that's not rocket science. We do go through a budgeting process. On the larger scale projects, we're going to need lots of help. But I will tell you, your 135,000 people out there, property taxes on 135,000 people will never get to the level where we can go do these large scale projects. And we can't just go back to people in their homes who live on fixed incomes, who want to stay at home, want to buy their house back from the government. We have to be much more creative than that and think of other ways to do it, because we can't put all this on the backs of 135,000 citizens when we've got 7.5 million visitors here.
I mean, and right? Not only that, but the Tri-County area, you're talking tourists that live in Berkeley and Dorchester County that come into the city and stimulate our economy and deal with all the issues. You know, they may not have a voice in the actual election, the runoff on the 19th, but they know people and they work in those places. And those are the ones that need to energize, because turnout is such an important point. And yet it's not as where it should be for a great city like this.
It's really amazing at local election level that people don't turn out like they do at the federal side, which is kind of flip-flop, because local elections really make a difference. Listen, one of these people, one of your listeners, you go find out who your city council person is. A lot of people don't know that. Find out if you live in the city. How do you know? Green garbage can. Green garbage can, you're in the city. You got a green garbage can, you're in the city. You can vote. Get out there and vote. Have your voice heard at the local level. You literally can have your voice heard. There are a number of instances, including in the last election, where races were decided, not literally, not figuratively, literally, by one vote.
Yes.
By one vote.
Yes. I mean, in these elections, every vote matters more so than, acutely more so than in other elections. And, you know, we're talking about money, and I want to give you a chance to respond to the accusations about dark money,
right,
and outside money coming in and help aiding your campaign and going against the mayor. And I just want to get your take on that, because that's another accusation that's flying around
right
now.
Well, I mean, all that's out there. I can tell the campaign that we've run has been a positive campaign on the issues. There's been some other people who had some things to say about that, but it comes from all angles. If you go and look at the mayor, he's raised over $1 million, and where that money has come from, it's come from out of state, it's come from developers. It's all come from different places. But in the end, what's been said out there that's true or not, it's all about the issues. And the issues for us and for me is, what's happened in the last 4 years? Are we moving the ball forward in all of this? And so for the next 2 weeks, we get to have that conversation. We're going to run this campaign on, here's where we think we are. Here's someone who's been trained for this job, has been involved. I mean, look at this. I was a city councilman 10 years ago. I'm now the chairman of CARTA, the Regional Transportation Authority. I saw one of the ads said that, you know, the only reason we got out of debt is we got a bailout. Well, that's not true. I mean, we've operated on a balanced budget since we got to zero. We've not lost a dime, and we've very, very consciously kept an eye on things. And that's been through regional cooperation, a board of 18 elected officials regionally that had a plan, that implemented it and stuck with it. That's the model that we have to work forward, and the leader of the city of Charleston has to be the leader in all of that.
Has the city council and the mayor done enough to deal with the issues of growth and especially hotel development? Because you hear that from so many people. They love Charleston, but man, there's another hotel going up there, and there's another one going up there. Have we done enough? Has enough been done over the last 4 years to deal with this that's changing the landscape of our entire community?
Well, the answer to that is no, and everybody knows the answer to that is no. We have to do more, and we can do more.
What about the issue that you've been accused of supporting developers and not supporting some of the mayor's proposals on city council?
It's very interesting. I mean, think about, first off, my district, historic downtown Charleston, and the one issue that was going on in 2015, last time we had a mayoral election, was what project? The Sergeant Jasper. And we thought we actually had a partnership with the mayor on that. We were going to resist the size, height, and scale of that project. He ran on that issue that no two kicks of the mule, we're going to protect against the Sergeant Jasper, we're going to rezone it. Well, where are we? So the only person who voted against that project in its height, scale, and mass, not once but twice, was me. I can assure you, if I went in front of the Sergeant Jasper tomorrow and called for a press conference and asked all my developer friends to join up with me, exactly zero would show up. Because remember, you know what I do for a living, right? When I'm not out there barking on the campaign trail.
Lawyer?
I'm a construction lawyer who represents owners of properties against, among other things, developers. So this whole notion that I'm some in the pocket of developers is, with all due respect, is ridiculous.
Well, finally, and I really...
And I think if you go out and ask them that, they would tell you that. I mean, we get along fine and professionally, but it's what I do for a living.
Well, I really appreciate the conversation, because these are all issues that, ironically, we've been talking about for several decades.
Right.
We continue having the conversation about them, and that's why this election is so important. And so as people weigh the ideas, because as you had mentioned, more than 50% of the people who did go and vote on election day voted not for the current mayor. They voted for someone else. So why is it, when they consider who they should vote for on Tuesday, November the 19th in the runoff, that you are the guy to do that?
Just look around and see what's gone on in the last 4 years and what's been told to you that was going to happen and what has and hasn't. And it's time to move on. It's time to actually go get some things done. That's what we've run this campaign on, a record of accomplishment at whatever level we've been in. And this whole idea that it's someone else's fault, not the chief executive officer of the city's fault, that we haven't got an agenda moving forward. I just don't think that that's an accurate portrayal of how things work around here. And that's what this campaign is all about.
Well, it's great to talk to you, and it's great to see you.
Always glad to see you.
And this feels very familiar. We've done this over the decades.
So just before we get off, I remember, and you probably remember this a long ago, 10 years ago when I was running, we sat here about 10 years and 3 weeks ago and had this conversation about my campaign. So you've been around for a long time, and I really appreciate you and the community getting people to talk and getting people out there to listen and hear what's going on in the local community.
Well, local elections matter more than any. And having a local station talking about local issues with local people who live here, that matters greatly, which is why I'm so happy to have the Morning Buzz 2.0 here on
Redux 2.0 here under construction, right?
That's right, under construction. And we'll see how things go on Election Day. And I really, really appreciate you coming in and talking with us. Look forward to continuing the conversation, regardless of what happens in the runoff, absolutely, because there's still a lot to talk about.
A lot to talk about. Get people out there to vote. I mean, no matter what happens, we're going to be here moving forward looking at the issues in the city. But for me, the objective through this election is to be in a place to set the agenda going forward so we can actually move forward on the large-scale projects that we hear about every single day, the large-scale challenges we hear about every day. We need to get moving.
Charleston City Councilman Mike Seekings joining us. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.